Council. We stated that we are solution-driven. We're ready to work with Portland Bike Share stakeholders to improve the proposal's equity commitments and its chances for equity success, and that together we can develop specific detailed goals on workforce diversity, contractor diversity, and station placement, and we can develop specific detailed mechanisms to achieve those goals. So I'm glad to say that the city accepted our invitation. I'm glad to say that Steve, Dan Bauer, Dan Layden, Celeste King worked hard to provide us with the opportunity to help shape the city's bike share RFP, to serve on the RFP's review committee. I believe we were the only non-governmental representative on the review committee, to design the written follow-up questions to applicants, to participate in the applicant interviews, and to shape the high road standards that are part of the contract before you today. A couple of elements about those standards that I'd like to emphasize is that there will be a high road committee comprising the city and Alta and coalition members as well as other stakeholders that will further refine and implement and importantly enforce these standards. This again is also from the Clean Energy Works model. And we'll also be tapping into the infrastructure we previously created with WSI and the Green Careers Training Project, using a number of community-based organizations to outreach into their communities to identify workers. So to be sure, we have a lot of work ahead, and my hope is that this contract means that we've all accepted this invitation to work together. We can do this work. We've done a lot of work together, the coalition, the city, and the sustainability community. We've taken double bottom line initiatives that protect the environment and make money, and we've turned them into triple bottom line initiatives, initiatives with environmental performance, financial performance, and equity performance. Initiatives like Clean Energy Works, with its commitments to workforce and contract diversity, wage and benefit standards, and inclusive and accountable decision making. Greater Green, where we added equity criteria to the EcoRoof program and 1% for green, and now Hacienda CDC on their futsal court is going to have an EcoRoof. Habitat for Humanity at its new Restore facility in Gateway is going to have an EcoRoof. 1% for green funding is helping pay for the redevelopment of Northeast 72nd Avenue so we can build access to Cully Park. Eco districts where coalition members Hacienda, NEA, and Verde have created Living Cully, where we're attracting national funding to our efforts to reinterpret sustainability as an anti-poverty strategy. And we can do this with bike share. As Mia said, our biggest challenge is station placement. How do we make these investments outside of the central city in low-income people of color neighborhoods? How do we bend the program to their needs? This is the task ahead and the path forward. And so in bike share, like these other initiatives that I mentioned, here's the situation, right? Together, we found a way to serve equity goals in a project that was really conceived to do other things. From Greater Green to Clean Energy Works to the Intertwine, these sustainability initiatives and their business plans, their outreach plans, their marketing studies, they seem to always launch or start up by serving some other community besides low-income people and people of color. That's their business model, right? Their target audience, the low-hanging fruit, it even has its own marketing category, the lifestyles of health and sustainability, or LOHAS. I mean, think about it. Between myself, Susan Anderson, Rob Bennett, Mia, and Derek Smith, we probably knew most of the first 30 homeowners that signed up for Clean Energy Works Portland. It's an insular community. And Bike Share has been conceived the same way. The business model we encountered proposed to serve other communities first and serve low-income and people of color second. We worked hard to change that, and the folks at this table are our current and future partners in that change. And so the last thing I'll say is that it doesn't have to be this way. For this and the next council, we can commit ourselves to begin designing sustainable initiatives that launch or start up by serving low-income people and people of color first, that these communities are the target audience. Let's make it plain, right? Alta will tell you, the Portland, Oregon Sustainability Institute will tell you, Girding Edelman will tell you that a sustainable future, a low-carbon future, a clean air future, a clean water future, a toxic-free future will require changes that impact the places we live, the work that we do, the things we learn in school, the means to travel within a city, the foods we eat and where they come from, and the places we go to recreate and commune with nature. In environmental justice terms, we call that the places we live, work, and play, and the way we get from one to another. So surely, Bike Share and other sustainable initiatives Sure to Come can address low-income and people of color communities' long-standing needs for housing, economic opportunity, education, transportation, and healthy neighborhoods. And it has to be this way. We have to serve these communities. We have to prioritize that service, and we have to work together to make it happen. Again, 25% of Portlanders are people of color. Half of the students in school are people of color. We can't have a long-lasting bike share program, a successful climate action plan. We can't green the East Side without them. No policy, no business, no government, no movement can stake its future on serving a declining market, a declining customer base, and declining constituency. You just have to ask Mitt Romney.
Well said. Thank you.
Thanks for the time. I appreciate it.
Let's take testimony and then, let's move your amendment first.
Thank you. And thank you all for your work on this and also for working with
my
office.
How many people do we have signed it?
Okay. Just very glad to hear about your work, and then to see it incorporated in the contract is excellent. I have some amendments which I've worked on, and I appreciate the PBOT and the mayor's office and ALTA working on these with me, essentially looking at alternative funding and plans to incorporate possibly bicycle helmet rental at the kiosks, and to clarify some of the public meeting requirements, also to ask the consultants and the Bureau to come back within 6 months with a report on how we're doing on things. So the amendments to the contract, having coordination with the...
So let's move them.
What's that?
So let's move them.
Well, I'm just saying what they are so I can move them.
I think we know. Right.
I've passed them out to the city attorney, the auditor, and the council. Coordinating with PBOT staff and neighborhood coalitions for other meetings, looking at research and exploration of technological solutions for helmets, and also establishment of safety rules and some training methods for renters. Thank you. Second.
Been moved and seconded. Council discussion.
Mayor, you've had a chance to look at these amendments, and they're acceptable?
Absolutely.
And as to the report, this would be a report to council members, and then the council could decide whether to have a hearing or not.
Correct. Carla, can you please call the vote on the motion to amend?
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
My intent actually was to have a report back to council, but we can discuss that later. Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Adams?
Either way, we're ready to go either way. Aye. All right, let's take testimony. We have one person signed up.
Demi Espinoza.
Hi, welcome.
Good morning.
Glad you're here. Just give us your first and last name, and you'll have 3 minutes.
Okay. My name is Demi Espinoza. Thank you for this opportunity to speak on behalf of the council. Yes, my name is Demi Espinoza, and I'm testifying on behalf of the Coalition of Communities of Color. And I wanted to thank the presentation by ALTA Bike Share and Alan as well. Like Alan mentioned, the Coalition of Communities of Color is an alliance of culturally specific organizations. We're working hard to assess and influence environmental policy through making our Community and Economic Development Committee a reality. We have identified sustainability as a goal, which includes sustainability funding and investments in communities of color. Portland's bike economy has not made significant funding and investment in communities of color, but Portland's bike share equity commitments can begin changing this lack of investment. My organization works to serve and is a recognized advocate for communities of color. And developing this relationship with ALTA Bike Share fits in line with our goals for sustainability. In our community, we have a clear need for jobs and business opportunities, as well as for transportation options. City leadership is critical to establishing and sustaining this relationship, while emphasizing to bike shareholders that the city considers these equity commitments fundamental, and the program will not be successful if these commitments are not aggressively pursued and achieved. Beyond bike share, we look forward to working with the city and the bike community to greatly increase our community's participation in the bike community and the bike economy, because sustainability is one of our mainline goals for the Coalition of Communities of Color. And we hope to work with ALTA Bike Share and the city to make this relationship a reality and successful. Thank you.
Thank you, and thank you for taking the time to come and testify. We appreciate it. All right, unless there's additional council discussion, Carla, would you please call the vote on item number 1414?
Leonard?
Congratulations. Fritz. Congratulations, Mayor Adams. I'm pleased to support this. Aye.
Thank you.
Fritz.
I didn't support this when it was on the list for funding. However, I've looked into the details of the contract, and my principal has been that moving forward to look at contracts and see if they make sense. This contract makes a lot of sense, and I appreciate the hard work that's gone into it, particularly by the Coalition of Communities of Color. It's a first that I have seen with this level of detail on the equity portion. So thanks to Katja Dillman and Dan and Peabot and Alta, as well as Tom Bizzo and my staff. To be clear, my amendment does say that there will be council review and approval after 6 to 9 months, so I do look forward to hearing some more about it. I think that will be a good way to help publicize the new system. Aye.
Fish?
There's some members of the press who are doing year-end pieces and summas about the service of a number of our colleagues. And so we're all getting interviewed about, you know, what...
I already heard the headline for mine.
What is the... what are the significant accomplishments? And I think for Mayor Adams, you'd have to put bikes in the mix. And I'm just going through my list of bike share, bike master plan, Sunday parkways, among other things, bike infrastructure. All of these have been controversial. All of them have had significant amounts of pushback. I think all of them, in some respect, have had some misunderstanding about how they fit into the larger vision for the city that the presentation pointed out, which is the Portland plan, the climate action plan, and where bikes fit. But the other slide that struck me was that cities across the country are already doing this and are experimenting and implementing bike share. Mayor Adams once told me that in terms of his hierarchy of things, bike share was almost near the top of things he cared about. And so we're here because he has prioritized this over time, and someone could write a book about all the twists and turns on this one, including when the original debate happened at Metro about the split on the funds, which I think was decided by a single vote. Anyway, we are here. Congratulations to Alta for getting the contract. Thank you to Alan for reminding us about where equity fits into all that we do. And I'm incredibly excited about this opportunity. And I'm guessing that until Parks is no longer in my portfolio, we'll be having some robust conversations about siting.
Yeah.
So congratulations to all. Aye.
Adams.
Well, I want to thank the great team at PBOT for their work on this. Part of the great work was me telling them over the past 8 years, we're going to wait. We're still waiting because I wanted to see what happened in other cities and because we had plenty of work to do in the hopper on some basic stuff, basic safety stuff on bikes. So I appreciate your patience because I think we are the beneficiary of lessons learned from all those other cities. I want to thank the folks in my office, Katja Dillman, and before her, Catherine Charlo, who worked on this, now Casey Ogden as well. Appreciate it. I'm supportive of bikes where they promote health, where they promote affordable and safe travel, because they reduce congestion for auto trips where bikes might not be the best choice, and because it helps us meet our greenhouse gas emission goals. Added to that, other cities are experiencing where the stations are, the businesses around them are experiencing better business. And so we have that opportunity here, micro economic development. This particular plan I'm very excited by because it is different than the other plans in the other cities in terms of its social justice component. The Clean Energy Works did, Alan is on that board with me as well, and others did prioritize getting the job done in terms of energy conservation, but doing it in a way that helped folks that have traditionally been excluded from the development of new industries, helping those folks be front and center in terms of the beneficiaries. I'm glad we've done that here. Very pleased to vote aye. So approved. Can you please read the title for time certain, item number 1415?
implement a street closure pilot program in the Old Town Entertainment District through parts of Northwest 2nd, 3rd, and 4th Avenues between West Burnside and Northwest Everett on certain days and during certain hours.
So how many people have been to this area, the block surrounding 3rd and Cooch, at, let's say, come on up, sit down, and let's say between 11 and 3 a.m.? All right, I have. Not a regular date night for me, but I have been there to observe this. And it was during Vera Katz's tenure as mayor that this area was anointed as the entertainment district. It was done so to try to encourage loud, noisy businesses to locate in these blocks and not strung out all over the central city. These blocks were chosen not because they lack any housing or home impacts at all, but that they had some of the least impacts on housing and folks that are obviously spending the night, hotels and places where people live. So there is some housing in the blocks, but years ago, this was the focus of where we wanted the noisy entertainment district. Also, it was on a grid, and it was something that the police bureau felt that they could, it afforded the best place to keep people safe. So we, the police bureau's entertainment district unit deals with the success of the city policy over the years to have the loud and noisy businesses sort of focused, the location focused down here, and deals with tens of thousands of visitors in these few blocks downtown every weekend throughout the year. The success of the entertainment district policy of the city, though, has also created a dangerous situation that we're seeking to address with this pilot project. For example, the crowds are now so great that cars and limos and taxis get trapped in the crowds, that cars that are parked provide sort of hiding places for everything from urination to fights to drug dealing. Our business partners down there have been great about doing surveillance cameras outside of their establishments and inside of their establishments that helps us with following up on crime, which helps prevent crime. But when you have vans and cars parked in the street, those surveillance cameras can be ineffective. When you have limos and taxis and cars trapped in the street, that can be ineffective. So our entertainment district unit, on their own initiative, went out and looked at best practices in other cities, and in fact didn't just study them online, didn't just study them with the books, but they went out and actually did site visits to how those other entertainment districts worked. And so what's in front of us is the result of being concerned about a problem, and an examination of what we need here with a lot of input through a public process locally and with input from best practices. So the idea here is to provide a place for people to drop off, whether that's limos, whether that's taxis, to have no parked cars on the street and to prevent through traffic on some streets so that the police can do their job, do it effectively with a lot of obstacles removed, literally. So with that, I will turn it over to our great Central Precinct Commander, Dave.
Thank you, Mayor, Commissioners. Well said, Mayor. I will echo those comments. I appreciate your support. This is an idea that the Police Bureau brought forward, and actually I'm encouraged by the fact that it was brought forward by the men and women that are down there working on regularly Fridays and Saturday nights. As the Mayor mentioned, we've had a detail assigned down there for a number of years now. Varies between 4 to 6 officers and a sergeant. This is a commitment that we made back under Mayor Katz's tenure so that we could adequately provide public safety. As the mayor mentioned, it has grown, I think, even beyond certainly our expectations. It's a vibrant community down there, and I've asked Howard to join us. He's the chair of the Public Safety Livability Group down in Old Town Chinatown, and he certainly has a long history down there to speak to as well. So as we have gone on and managed in this way, in our traditional fashion of staffing it with officers and a sergeant throughout the weekends, and then on certain holidays that may not fall on a weekend, such as Fat Tuesday or St. Patrick's Day, days that tend to draw a lot of people to the bars downtown, we began to look at, is this the best way to manage this? Is in terms of creating public safety, in terms of creating an environment where the community feels safe, wants to be, wants to participate. And also, we see this, and I really believe in my role at Central Precinct, I've come to understand that we have a place at the table in supporting the city and its growth, not just in the area of public safety, but really in the area of economic development and business. And I think that we do that by partnering with the folks very well down there in this district. We have a very close working relationship with the bars, with the owners, with the businesses, both at night and during the daytime, including with the Chinatown community as well. So this is an area with a long history of investment by the police bureau. We bring this idea forward because we think that it'll create a safer atmosphere. We think it will be good for business and for community. And what I like about it is it's a proposal. It's a trial. I'm certainly not married to this idea, but if we don't take risks once in a while, we don't know if we'll be successful. We've had over 17 neighborhood meetings with various groups down there since the 1st of September, multiple different from the Union Gospel, where we did a walk around on a Saturday night at 11:30 with the staff from the Union Gospel, NATO properties, et cetera. We've gone nearly door-to-door with the communities down there. We've met with street roots. We've spoken with, you know, longtime folks down there, such as ourselves and others, to get their feedback and their interest. I will say that most of the concerns that were mentioned are concerns that are already happening. There are concerns going forward that this will be an increase in noise or an increase in garbage or increase in problems. We certainly, that's not our intent, and if that is the case at the end of the 90 days or even during the process, we feel like this is not manageable, we can walk away from it. Because through support of PBOT, we control the ingress and egress of the area, and if we need to, we will just go back to the way that business has been done for several years. But our hope is that at the end of the first 90-day period, that we will, through our stakeholders and through our own information gathering, you know, be able to come back and report that there's been a positive change. There's been a reduction in noise, a reduction in disturbances, a reduction in calls for service, and hopefully an increase for area businesses. And they'll be pleased. We've met with taxi companies, the limo companies, you know, tried to identify the pedicabs, as many people as we can that service that area and participate down there, to make them aware of it, and have received good support from them. So that's kind of where they're at. I've supplied a document with a lot of information in it. I won't go over that with you in detail, but if you have questions either now or later, certainly feel free to have your staff email me or call me.
Before we get to this fine gentleman, I mean, one thing that I don't think that I've found frustrating over the years is when we have had violent crime down there and that is one of our hotspots for violence is I can remember a couple of cases over the years where we had video surveillance, but it was blocked by cars.
Right, right.
And so it really was unusable. Whatever happened behind some visual obstacle.
And the elimination of the vehicles, as you mentioned, Mayor, twofold. One, it gives us greater visibility, and that's favorable. It's going to reduce the vandalism. We see, you know, vandalism to cars down there. As you mentioned, you know, even the public urination or the fact that it can mask criminal behavior. And then also the elimination of the traffic is very significant. In our estimation, you know, the majority of vehicles that are traveling down 3rd Avenue, which is the biggest thoroughfare that would be blocked between Everett and Burnside, the far majority of those are people that are either coming to attend one of the local bars that are concentrated there at the area of 3rd and Cooch, or quote-unquote cruisers coming through just to see what's going on. And so, you know, the multitude of near misses, which is difficult to capture, and largely on behalf of the hard work of the officers down there to prevent them, is really astounding. I mean, we see regularly where there are nearly collisions, or maybe it's not recorded as a collision. What started out as a person, you know, slamming their hand on the hood of a car because they're intoxicated and the driver that almost hit him is intoxicated, and we step in, we may code that as a disturbance, you know, versus a near pedestrian collision. But we believe that this is an area of high risk, and so the elimination of the vehicles to create the pedestrian zone is critical.
So talking of code types, thank you for that.
Yes.
The top four, if you could just tell me what they are, SUB, STP, what does that stand for? Yep.
And what page?
It's on page 19.
Acronyms.
Yes.
Yeah, so on page 19, so that's a subject stop. Subject stop is largely something that's self-initiated by the police. So I would categorize that broadly as those are people that we've encountered. Remember, this is in about an 11-12 month period, these dates are. So whenever we contact somebody, we're out on the radio saying we're talking to somebody at the corner of 3rd and Cooch. It doesn't necessarily mean that there's enforcement action taken. A variety of reasons why we could have been talking to them. As simple as maybe they approached us, we didn't know what they wanted, and we just say there's a subject stop here, and they ask us for direction, and we say, okay, we're done. We move on.
Okay.
The next one is traffic stops, 137 traffic stops in just that area alone. We work closely with the traffic division, particularly on Friday and Saturday nights. And if you look down a little bit farther, you'll notice way down towards the bottom, it says DUI 1, but traffic stops 137. And what I noticed in capturing this information is sometimes we ironically don't give ourselves enough credit that I know that there's far more DUI arrests that have occurred, but oftentimes they start out at a traffic stop. In fact, officers, because of the concentration on foot, will, you know, stop a car that's not driving appropriately, determine the driver's drunk, and arrest them or have them arrested for DUI, and that'll be categorized as a traffic stop versus a DUI. So I need to go back if you want more clear information so we can make that distinction, because I apologize for that and noticing that. DISTP is a disturbance in progress. So there's 92 of those. Those are largely 911 generated calls. So in the course of that little over a year, 92 disturbances in progress. That's what the P means. If you look farther down, it says disturbance, 11. Those will be disturbances that we come upon that are over, whereas a 911 call, maybe they had a disturbance and we get there. But these are actual events that are occurring, you know, when we arrive, security struggling with somebody or in the street or whatever the case may be. And the final one, flag, once again, as a broad category, there's 49. That just is a term we use, flag down, and that's interchangeable with subject stops. It's entirely possible where not uncommon for security or even a citizen to say, hey, there's a person over here who's in the doorway we're concerned about, or somebody over there looks disoriented. Can you go over and check on them? And they'll flag us down. So we'll just code it in such a way. We've been flagged down at this intersection to check on X, Y, and Z.
Thank you. Do we know how many medical calls have occurred in this area?
Well, if you notice down there towards the bottom, there's only two that are recorded at this time. And what I've asked our strategic services to do yesterday was to take a closer look at that, because typically we don't capture medical's response. So I've asked them to identify, are these, you know, only the two times that we've called for medical, or how many times has medical been summoned by others? And then it wouldn't be uncommon for us, you know, to go to a disturbance or an assault call where medical's been called, but we don't capture that. It's separate. So I will get that information to you. I know that was invented.
Thank you. Do we know if there have been any crashes between pedestrians and cars?
Well, there are mentioned down here a couple of accidents that have occurred. You'll see ACH. That's hit and run, or accident unknown if injury, et cetera. There's a few listed. I don't have the, and once again, those questions came up yesterday, and so we're looking at them. There's the accident non, which says 5. That would be a non-injury accident. I will say, as mentioned earlier, that the near misses are what are difficult to capture. And,
right.
And on a nightly basis, there are just so many. And that's what's really concerning to us and motivating us to bring this forward, because we feel like, to use a phrase, it's an accident waiting to happen.
Thank you. And I just have a couple more questions. Does the police bureau enforce the taxi regulations?
Yes, we do. We have been over the ELS, specifically over the last couple years. And when you say enforce, we document the illegal taxi cabs, and then we submit that documentation to the Revenue Bureau for follow-up on their end.
And do you have an estimate of the amount that you currently, that the cost involved of policing this area versus the cost that would be involved under the proposal?
Well, the cost will be the same from a law enforcement standpoint because we're already doing this. I already assign a number of officers and a sergeant to this area. And PBOT has agreed to support us in the initial onset with the traffic control. If there is an ongoing cost for the police bureau long term, it may require the additional officer to be assigned down there to help with traffic control at some point.
Thank you. And that just reminded me of one more question, the noise control aspects. How do you envision the police getting people to be quiet?
Well, one of the things we've recognized in this process is that we haven't been doing our due diligence with the noise control ordinances, and so we have met with the noise control group here with the city. We're training all of our officers that are assigned down there, and they'll have the meters to be able to identify whether it's too loud or not. And then we've had good response in working with the bars and so forth to have them turn things down, but now we'll actually have a formal measurement to do, and then we'll record that information in written form and submit that.
Thank you. And that's for amplified music, but just the loud voices, if there are going to be people congregating in the street, even though they won't be drinking because you'll be
right.
Enforcing that, how do you envision getting them to be quiet?
Well, that certainly is a concern that we have, and I recognize that, you know, any time that we're going to create a pedestrian thoroughfare area, we're sensitive that we certainly don't want to add to the noise and confusion that's already occurring down there. And, you know, certainly our presence alone, we have a well-trained group of officers down there that are constantly engaging folks, and I've found historically, you know, simply a conversation goes a long ways. You have a group that's gathering, a large group, you know, go up, have a conversation. I mean, we're limited in terms of enforcement, and that's something we would have to evaluate at the end of the day.
Matt.
But I envision going forward, engaging in conversation, and saying, hey, you know, there are people that live around here. Can we keep it down? Can we move along? And we would have room to move them along, too. Yes,
sir. So the other thing is folks tend to, especially inebriated folks, tend to act better when they see a police officer. So part of clearing the streets is about of obstacles. Visual obstacles is making the police more visible.
Correct.
And right now, one car blocking the view of one police officer, you're not observing whatever is blocking the officer's view, and the folks on the other side of the vehicle can't see you or the officer. So the reason why this is not adding, this is trying to make better use of the resources that we have down there already. And we think there'll be a minimum less honking of cars,
mm-hmm.
and if they know that a police officer is nearby, it's just been our qualitative experience, and they can see them, that they'll be less boisterous.
Right. So hopefully, you know, the reduction in noise will come from the cars and the vehicular traffic in terms of there's an increase of noise now because of people and the sense of freedom to express, then we will have to manage that and see how it goes in terms of, you know,
Commander, I have a couple questions, if I could. How many parking spots would be displaced by this plan?
I believe it's about 63. Just a minute. You know, Sergeant Steinbrun's assigned down there on nights, gracious him to come in on day shift today. Is it 68?
It's approximately 68 parking spots.
68, sir.
And if someone's parked there at the time this is in place, they would be towed?
Correct, beginning at 10 p.m. to 3 a.m. We have in this document that I provided, we have a heavy education campaign we intend to initiate, you know, both through the businesses down there and through ONI and through our own payo office and et cetera.
And if I could, we will be towing people to the nearest closest lot, so we're not towing them down all the way.
No charge.
At no charge. We're not towing them all the way across town.
Right.
At page 8 of the report, it says that you've agreed to make reasonable accommodations for access to disabled persons and necessary services. So we do have a lot of older disabled people in that neighborhood. Can you give us an example of what's a reasonable accommodation for someone that is used to being picked up in front of their building by a van?
And that is what we mean by reasonable. You know, fortunately, the hours of 10 p.m. to 3 a.m., several of the people we've identified are typically not coming and going. We don't see a high number of disabled vans or buses or, you know, the equipment that would be used in that way. But if it's identified at these entrance points, then we would make sure and escort them in. You know, once again, the idea is to be sensitive to the community that lives around there and make sure they can get in. So when I say reasonable, we can still get them to their front door.
Okay, and one other question. You know, there's lots of bars in this area. We encourage people after a night of revelry not to get in their cars, but hopefully get in a cab or a bus. It might, for some people, initially cause them some confusion about where to go to get a cab, unless they call for a cab, you know, at whatever restaurant or bar they're at. Are you thinking of maybe setting up a cab stand somewhere in this area so that there's a dedicated place?
Yes, there will be on Davis Street. So all cabs and limos and party buses will come down Everett, turn on to 3rd, and there'll be traffic control there, and then they will park on Davis. And then if you turn to page 16, we've created a small card that all the bars and restaurants will have, as well as the officers, to hand out to people, explaining them where the pickup and drop-off is. And we've met with the cab companies, explained this. And the nice thing even about this card is on the back has the 6 license companies, so they know who to call if they want to be picked up somewhere outside of the district.
When you implement this pilot, will you have officers actually at intersections serving as traffic control people initially to deal with the traffic and helping to change people's behavior?
Initially, we are going to have to staff this in such a way, yes, so that we can have those intersections properly marked and identified that, you know, this isn't just a street closure, but there's also a law enforcement presence and expectation that you're here. And once again, we, you know, through the officers and through our reserve program, we plan on doing that.
Yeah. And I guess finally, every time we close a street, there's some impact in terms of displacement.
Exactly.
Do you have a sense of where, at least initially, the displacement will go and what you, in the long term, hope it settles down?
Well, 2nd and 4th Avenue are still viable options, you know, for 3rd, for the blocking of 3rd. So that's something that if we start to see, you know, large traffic jams or traffic problems, once again, as part of the evaluation process, come back and visit. But I think, once again, our experience has been, yes, we're closing a street, but the vehicular traffic is minimal in those hours on those weekends in that core.
So page 11, I think, is, and then I want to give our esteemed guests a chance to speak. Page 11, I think, is, I found that useful because it shows how pedicabs are allowed in on 3rd and how the taxi and limo zones, you know, get to the heart of the district so that people will see them. They'll be much more orderly. They'll know where to go. They'll, just like you would go to the airport, people will learn that pretty quickly. And we want people to use those and not drive home inebriated. The other thing that PBOT is working on after the trial, we want to see how the trial goes, is then really marketing the Old Town Garage for people to, because it's underused. So we take off 63 spots here, but meanwhile, literally a block off of this, bordering this first block, bordering this, we've got a big underutilized parking structure that the city owns.
Right.
Thank you very much.
Yep. Yeah, I'll show you. Hi, welcome. Welcome back.
Good morning, Mayor. My name is Howard Weiner, for the record, and I chair the Public Safety Livability Committee in Old Town. I've also owned a business, Cal Skate Skateboards, and I've been in the neighborhood, that particular neighborhood, for 28 years. So that's the experience that I bring to the table. First of all, I want to thank the police department for bringing forth this proposal. And also Mike Boyer from the Office of Neighborhood Involvement Crime Prevention Specialist. They've done a tremendous job of outreach. And we held 3 major meetings and multiple small meetings on this issue. And all the restaurants were invited, the bar owners were invited, residents were invited, and business owners. And we had some great discussion, some of it heated. Not everyone was for this proposal, particularly at the beginning. Restaurant owners were concerned that their patrons couldn't get to them and get out. It was tweaked. And so now we moved from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. On that. Residents are starting to find their voice. And Mayor, you alluded to under Mayor Katz, we promoted that neighborhood. I was one of those that promoted the neighborhood for the entertainment district. Well, gosh, success. Tens of thousands of folks, or 5,000, 8,000 folks. I'm in bed at that time, but that's how many come down there. But then the question becomes the conflict, day life, night life. A lot of the folks who live in that neighborhood don't have a voice. They live in Central City Concern, SROs. They're in recovery, some of them. And some of them just poor folks. They haven't had a voice in this. You also have, over the last 15 years, new development. Pacific Tower was built. Old Town Lofts was built. The building I'm in, Fifth Avenue Court and Fifth Avenue apartments that all border this area. So you have a bit of a different dynamic today than we had when we first promoted this area. My hope and desire, and obviously I'm supportive of this 90-day trial, but my hope and desire is that we take this opportunity to have that discussion as to how we manage that conflict. How do we mitigate the negatives for the residents? How do we support the bars and the restaurants, which have really been a blessing for Old Town Chinatown, along with U of O, Mercy Corps, and OCOM. Old Town Chinatown is starting to come to life, but with that, we need to manage that. And my hope and desire is that this council will be able to come back to it in 90 days after having those meetings. I intend to dedicate our January, February, maybe March meeting to that discussion, and also work with the police, as we've been doing, in seeing if any changes need to be made. But whether or not we close the streets or not, and I know, Commissioner Fritz, you and I have emailed back and forth and the concern of it turning into a Mardi Gras, well, then we go back to the way it was. But even if we go back, the issues still remain. And so I looked at this as a perfect opportunity to have that discussion. So I thank you very much. And I'll answer any questions. But before I leave, since this is the last time I'll be able to talk to the two of you, I want to take a moment. But go ahead. No questions?
I'd like for both of you, I'm concerned about voting for this as an emergency ordinance and doing it right now. Mm-hmm. It was envisioned to come a little earlier, and you did take the extra time to talk with folks, but there was supposed to be a two-week notification period, mm-hmm. and then we're right into the holidays starting it now. So what's your sense of starting it now as an emergency versus taking 30 days to set it up, do the evaluation, set up the criteria, and then do it January, mm-hmm. February, March?
Well, my preference, let me explain that, it would be to have an emergency ordinance, because we know New Year's is one of the New Year's, Fat Tuesday, Mardi Gras. We have even larger crowds. But with that said, if it takes getting it done right, if there's something missing still, then so be it. But I guess I've spoken. You know, that's my preference.
I would support that, you know, maybe overly ambitious on my part. I did want to try and capture this two-week break period. One, there would be an opportunity for us to kind of prepare for a couple of weekends and then launch into New Year's, which is clearly one of our bigger holidays. At the same time, intentional about starting this program now, which is typically a quieter time of year. But the 90-day period, if we start in mid-January, for example, after a 30-day hearing, would still encompass some of those holidays that I've identified, as well as spring break. And then I really believe we would have to make a commitment and a decision no later than Memorial Day what we're going to do going forward, because clearly the summer months after Memorial Day is when we see the big increase. So I'm accepting of that.
My worries of accepting that, and I appreciate it, is that the extensive outreach that you've done. And we have had a lot of drunken violence on New Year's. And this does, if we do the emergency, give, fulfill from what unless I've misread it, the two-week notification for New Year's. And it also allows you to polish the baseline data along the lines that Commissioner Fritz requested. We have a lot of guns in the city right now, and I don't want to mess around with going through New Year's with a city like all American cities so swamped with illegal guns. So that's my concern and why I support the emergency clause, and it's a 90-day trial period. Thank you both very much. Who else has signed up?
I have one comment. I want to thank both of you, Sam and Randy. I know you're both leaving this council. I will miss you, both of you. A lot of folks don't realize the dedication of all of you on this council and how many hours you put in. Both of you have dedicated yourselves to the city for many, many, many years in different roles. And I just wish you well in your next adventures. And you can always come on down, and we'll go skating together.
That'd be great.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for the kind words. We're going to take testimony now. You're okay. We'll get you, I promise. So how many people have signed up?
4 people.
All right. And did you sign up, sir? Come on up.
We have Steve Entweisel. Whistle. Jack Lavelle, Carol McCreary, and Ryan Haashuggen.
And did you sign up, sir? Or?
Yeah, I signed up.
Okay, come on up. I think we'll take one more in the next round. Yep. Did we get everybody? Oh, great. Hi, would you like to go first?
Sure. So, quick and short, first.
Your name, please.
Jack Lavelle.
Thank you.
This is what happened on August 18th. So, I'm here, this picture. This is after when I'm in the hospital, not point of impact, so nighttime. I'm not against the zone. Okay, what I'm against is reading private security and police will keep eyes on. Well, this is what happened to me. I was out on 3rd and Cooch on public sidewalk over a couture. I see someone didn't know, just say hi really quick. They go blabber, point me, and end result, I get pushed down by PD on the sidewalk, busted open, blood, and like I said, this is taken at the hospital. So imagine just taking what happened, how much blood and pool of blood was there. So I'm not against no parking, so you know that zone, because I'm through the foot traffic there, cars, but the private security telling the PD the wrong stuff, and the PD goes off them, and I get my head busted open for this. When I'm on the public sidewalk, 3rd and Cooch, they blast stuff on the megaphone, say I'm a creeper, make all the stuff up, and the PD works like the same. That's why I'm not for it. I'm not against stopping that zone for the traffic, yeah, because at that time, Friday and Saturday, 11 p.m. starts at 2:30 ends there and 3 a.m., I can't go back. I'm trespassing going there and any place. I'm like, bam, all that. So I'm not against that. But you have the PD and, security works with PD. They go off, PD goes off, security says. And then they don't not as sufficient accurate. And, it's like a gang territory you're going to have there, And the PD is, they work, the gang is the security, private security. And same as PD there because they go with what the, security says. So that's what I get. And the thing says... And this is in here. This is ultimate Constitution from Preamble Declaration of Independence. It's the 3 minutes. But when a long train of abuses and usurpations pursuing and varying the same object and vices designed to reduce them under absolute death position, is their right, is their duty to throw off such government and to provide new gods for future security? So like I said, I get accused of stuff, stand for it, no, and I get my head busted open.
Did you file a complaint, sir?
The PD was there. No, they did it. And the ambulance, they brought in, and then I say, oh, I don't need medical attention. And it's like a public scene to me. They block up the whole sidewalk. It's like, mass demonstration, public out there. People try to come up, security gets them out. People try to take pictures. They tell them to go away. Even like if they're going to get arrested and all that. And it's like, I'll portray as a person. The bad one, they're in the wrong.
So you have the right to file a complaint, basically.
Well, I was there. Like I said, under this.
Let me just finish. I know you're upset, and I want to try to offer you some assistance. That might address your sense of being mistreated. So Clay Neal in the back there, raise your hand, Clay, if you could turn around. He works in my office.
I came to the office. I came here up to your office.
And he can help you file a complaint so that this is looked into.
Well, see, I'm not looking to try to go back there because I'm at a different living, a different location. So that's my area.
You want to make us aware.
Yeah, and then it's like I said, and after that, I walk along the sidewalk, and I get dirty looks. And that even started before. I got the dates. That started like 2 months ago when I got code 86, banned for trust code there. And I wasn't even there. And even the people I was with on that, Friday, that Saturday come, there. They said, oh, no, he's not. And they didn't even take them because of one person, drunk and all that, because of one person, one girl. So the girl I was hitting her that night, and I didn't talk to her or see this. All the people I was with who were talking, they invited me out of the way. Because one person never saw her saying, hit her, everything.
You're,
They go off there, and then all this stuff, rodeo 86, after walking along the sidewalk, which leads up to this.
So, sir, your time is up. I would encourage you.
Well, that's what I say. That longer.
I appreciate it. I'd encourage you to file a complaint, but I do. I do appreciate you bringing it to our attention.
Under freedom of speech, you have to do paper or something. You know, there's already data before that.
So. Okay, thank you for your testimony, sir. Hi, welcome. Okay.
Hi, my name is Ryan Hashian. I own Portland Pedicabs. Our business is located at 345 Northwest Everett and has been located there for the last 5 years. I just found out about this meeting very quickly ago, so I raced down here on my bike to meet you guys. You know, we've been there for 5 years, and we've seen our business grow. We've seen that neighborhood grow substantially, especially along 3rd Avenue. And while business has grown in that area, traffic is grown to a standstill. And the pedestrian traffic on the sidewalks is very congested. The traffic from the sidewalks spills over into the streets. And from my viewpoint on Everett Street, looking at the corner of 3rd from my shop, all the traffic that I see going down 3rd is mostly people looking for parking or people trying to cruise and impress potential mates while they're cruising down 3rd Avenue. While there is some private for hire transportation that's going down there, like ourselves, and I am a member of the Private for Hire Transportation Board, so I'm very, you know, very much appreciate those interests. We are all at a standstill, stuck in gridlock traffic there, and I feel like that creates a very frustrating situation for the motorists. And so you have vehicles that are revving their engines, using their vehicles in a threatening way, when you have people trying to cross on the main intersections of Cooch and Davis. So I really want to say that I fully appreciate and want to say thank you to the Portland Police Department for considering such an innovative and forward-thinking policy like has been implemented in places like Austin and Vancouver, BC. I also want to say thank you for them implementing their Cooch and Davis Street closures, which were implemented a year and a half ago and have been implemented very successfully and have really created a much safer environment on those streets. I think that keeping 4th Avenue open for private for hire is great because that is a crucial thoroughfare that accesses the rest of the city, Broadway, Steel Bridge, Gleason, et cetera, whereas 3rd Avenue really is only utilized people coming off the Steel Bridge, coming up Everett, just to cruise down that street and be seen. So I just want to say thank you, and I would encourage that you adopt this policy as quickly as possible for the safety of all Portlanders and all people visiting that business district.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah, thank you.
And if people wanted to hire one of your pedicabs, what's your URL?
Yeah, you can look us up at portlandpedals.com. Thank you so much.
Portlandpedals.com. Hi, welcome back.
My name is Carol McCreary, and I'm a resident homeowner of Old Town Lofts. I'm on the board of the Neighborhood Association. I'm on the Livability Committee and my Homeowners Association and also part of the Restroom Activists of Flush. And in all of these fora, we've discussed this. I, like the rest of you, have great thanks for the team from the Portland Police Bureau for Howard's work in Livability, and especially to Mike Boyer of ONI. But as it happened, the fleshed-out proposal, and I see that the ordinance now has specified some of our concerns on cost dealing with the four officers, because we had an earlier version of that. But we only saw the proposal in the last Livability Committee on the last Wednesday of November, and we're able to discuss it in our Neighborhood Association board meeting. And I suspect that you have received a letter from our board chair of the Old Town Chinatown Neighborhood Association. I would just like to reiterate those concerns and my own concerns. Our concerns are basically the huge number of disabled people that need access to their buildings and who live in buildings without central air conditioning, whose windows are open throughout the night in the summer, the cost considerations for the long period of setup that'll be required, and the notification. Cleanups, we notice that there's a lack of provision for any supplementary toilets, which are normally you have at street events. And most of all, we worry about displacement. So I'd just like to reiterate the concerns of the board, I'm not reading from the letter, but more from the minutes, which I believe were pretty much shaken down. We would like that any experiment take into account the impact of the entertainment district on residents, with or without street closure, one way or another. We couldn't be involved until the specifications were down, so we came in a little bit late in the game as buildings on the faces of these. Second, that the cost not be passed on to the larger community, but share with bar owners. We pay into the bid as homeowners. We want to avoid higher fees. And secondly, that you ensure that information evaluation processes are transparent and inclusive of all stakeholders, both those in the area and beyond which, as we are very concerned about displacement to the periphery.
Thanks for your testimony very much. Sir?
Hi, I'm Stephen Entwistle. I live in Portland, Oregon, downtown. I live at the Fairfield Hotel. It's in between 11th and 12th on Stark, Southwest Stark. And my room is the one with the half-dead bamboo plant up in the window. Okay. Anyway.
That's you.
Oh, yeah, cool.
We've been
me.
Meaning
that's
to talk me. To you yeah. about that.
Anyway, let me ask you a question. How many screaming banshees does it take to wake you up in the morning? Okay, we talk about large groups of people, you know, like that's the problem. Well, no, it could take a handful of people, especially if they are geared at making sure that you don't get a good night's sleep, to making sure you wake up, okay? We have been basically disrespected by our neighbors in that area for quite some time. In fact, I'm unprepared and I'm a little bit deranged myself today, to be honest with you. The people that live in the building there have suffered, okay, greatly over the years, okay? And trying to get, we have a lack of enforcement, noise enforcement, okay? There's not enough boots on the ground. And the bars know that, and they get away with it. And by the time you call the police, it's too late. It's too much of a problem. It's too big of an issue for the police to actually handle that. Okay, you got a lot on their plate right now, okay? One problem is that the Nuisance Bureau had 10 members just a few years ago before, and now it's down to one, okay? And his name is Paul Van Orden, and he has a $15,000 microphone, okay, that he goes three blocks away, you know, and says, well, and then he determines how much noise that we are made to put up with, okay? So it's up to them to determine what keeps us awake, or what, you know, we wake up, you know, what, 20, 30 times a night. We can't even get a good night's sleep there, okay? I've been homeless. I've lived up in the hills, okay? I finally got housing after a couple of years, okay? Finally got housing, but I can tell you what, that's no guarantee that you're going to get sleep, okay? That's no guarantee at all, okay? And when you can't get anybody to enforce the noise nuisance rules, okay, then what does one do? Okay, if I go down there in the street and I try to say, hey, guys, be quiet, okay, and then I get, you know, a whole bunch of antagonizing, responses, right? Who's the bad guy then, okay? And why, and isn't that a self-fulfilling prophecy of violence in the city, okay, that they're creating their own violent cycle because they're not enforcing the noise ordinances, the noise rules. Just give me one more second here. I've gone down to Pacific Patrol, okay, and they've done a pretty good job, okay. I got to, you know, tip my hat to those guys, okay. They do a pretty good job, even though they cannot write tickets, okay. But I went down and talked to the vice president, and the main issue is a zoning problem, okay. And he goes, oh yeah, I talked to Adam down there at Pacific Patrol. And he says, yeah, we've known that for years. Okay, it's years that we've known that that's a zoning problem. So that's the issue right there. It's okay. A zoning issue. I mean, that would solve everything. But the problem is where do you put them? And they've, you know, you've already let the horse out of the barn. Okay, so how do you get the horse back in the barn? You don't.
So I appreciate your testimony.
Thank you very much.
You did a good job on testimony. You can stay right there for a second.
Just, Mayor, I've been thinking about the Fairfield recently because for reasons that are not entirely clear to me, the county has taken the position that it is no longer eligible for a tax abatement. And that is because over the last few years, the management of the building shifted to Guardian, which actually is a provider that manages a lot of affordable housing in our community. And again, for reasons I don't understand, the county, particularly after we completed the big look and reformed our tax abatement programs, I do not understand why we're in litigation over whether this building. But I'm very pleased that you're here because you remind us that the people who live in the Fairfield, whether they have a Section 8